following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Welcome in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness for a Sunday. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader, who is off filming his brand new TV show. Now, I'll tell you this much. If you were listening to Midnight in the Desert on Wednesday when I filled in for Dave, I gave you a little clue as to what he's doing on this new TV show. He can't tell you. He's under a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA, and can't tell you what he's doing. I can tell you what he's doing. Are you ready? If you weren't listening to Midnight on Wednesday, I'm going to tell you right now. It's called Dave Schrader BCPI. Dave Schrader Bikini Clad Paranormal Investigator. Here's how it works. Dave puts on a bikini. I know it may not be the most PG TV show you've ever seen in your life. Dave puts on a bikini. He wanders into a haunted location. And when he feels a cold spot, boy, do you know it. I'm just saying, there's some indicators there. And when he wanders in, the cold hits him, and you know there's a ghost. That's basically the premise. It's coming to a cable channel near you in the fall, and by gosh, it's exciting. Dave is a vulnerable older gentleman, and there's plenty of indicators to let you know there's a ghost there. So look for it at a cable channel near you this fall. Just saying. No, I'm kidding. Dave... Dave will be back on True Crime Tuesday. You've got me today, and we've got a wonderful show coming up. Laura Tempest Zakroff will be with us in just a moment. I have one more thing to tell you before we get to her. I am appearing, depending on what time you're hearing this podcast today on Sunday, I'm appearing over in Coon Rapids with IWI at 2 o'clock today. Today's a big day in the wrestling world, in case you don't know. It's not only, it's like wrestling Christmas today, pro wrestling Christmas today. WWE, of course, has had a WrestleMania weekend all weekend. On Friday, you had NXT TakeOver. Saturday, you had the Hall of Fame. Today, you've actually got WrestleMania. So, I mean, that starts typically at 4 o'clock is when the kickoff show is, and then it lasts until, like, I don't know, midnight or something, Central Time. That's 4 o'clock Central Time. Yeah, of course, I live in Central Time. We have IWI in our April card today over in Coon Rapids at the VFW, Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Minnesota, of course, I'm saying it with the accent. And we're over in Coon Rapids today at 1919 Coon Rapids Boulevard. 2 p.m. is bell time. 2 p.m. is when we're starting over there. Doors open at around 1. Huge card today with our main event being Heavy Metal Lore, our IWI heavyweight champion, against Tommy Spider Baby Saturday, our U.S. champion. That's our main event today. Of course, I am your ring announcer and evil vice president. It's how I get my therapy. Once a month, I promise that's the only time I'm evil. I will shake hands and kiss babies. I'll do that deal afterwards. But come on out. $12 for adults, $8 for kids. It's going to be a huge card. And we promise we'll get you home in time for WrestleMania. We'll do that. We're running straight through, no intermission today, so that we can get you home for WrestleMania. So 1919 Coon Rapids Boulevard, 2 p.m. is when we're starting. We're running straight through, no intermission. We're just going to go straight through today. So make sure you join me if you're listening before 2 p.m. Central Time, Minnesotans. Please, we want you to come on out and join us for our April card. We got a huge, great card for you to kick off your WrestleMania Sunday. Also want to shout out to our buddy Chris Jericho. I know today's a little bit of a bittersweet day for him. He's, of course, part of the new AEW, and we're excited about All Elite Wrestling. I'm going out to Double or Nothing in Las Vegas in May and supporting All Elite Wrestling. But I know today's a little bit of a bittersweet day for him, as WWE isn't playing ball with our buddy Chris, and they've banned him from WrestleMania today. So, and they even gave away his WrestleMania tickets. That sucks. So he's been posting photos from Access, I guess, today. He posted his outfit from WrestleMania 18 when he wrestled Shawn Michaels, and it's just a lonely little outfit just hanging there. Sorry, Chris. But our hearts are with you today, buddy. I know it's a bittersweet day today. So, but we'll see you at Double or Nothing taking on Kenny Omega. And no, that's going to be a good card too. So, and of course, we'll see Chris, and you can see Chris as well on the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager 2 at Sea. I like to call it Rager 2 Electric Boogaloo. He's got another name for it, but we're going to be aboard the Rager 2 at Sea with Chris in January of 2020. And of course, you can get your tickets for that as well. Go to darknessevents.com and click on the banner and join us at Sea. We're the only paranormal experts on board with Chris Jericho's cruise. It's chrisjerichocruise.com as well. Book your cabins. Now, the thing's already over half sold. Last time we did a UFO summoning. I'm telling you, we got some special stuff in store for Chris Jericho's cruise this time. So chrisjerichocruise.com, book your tickets now and come sailing with us in January. We're going to the Bahamas again, and we're going to have some fun. And I'm telling you, you may think, yeah, but there's wrestling and rock and roll too on this thing, and I'm a paranormal person. We had such a blast last time that this time, and I'm guaranteeing you, even if you're not a wrestling person, I know you like rock and roll. And they have a Queen cover band that's already signed to the cruise that I know you're going to love. But ChrisJerichoCruise.com, it is the vacation of a lifetime. You're going to have a great time. Dave, who doesn't like wrestling, Dave, who doesn't like metal, went on this cruise and absolutely had a ball. Best vacation he's ever had, guaranteed. So sign up. Come hang out with us. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, let's get to our show today because we've got a great one. Laura Tempest Zakroff has been a practicing modern traditional witch for more than two decades, and she revels in the intersection of her path as an author, artist, and dancer. Weave the Liminal is her fourth book. Laura blogs for the Pathos Pagan channel and Witches and Pagans, and she contributes to the Witches Almanac. You can visit her at Laura Tempest Zakroff, that's ZAKROFF.com. Let's welcome to Beyond the Darkness, Laura Tempest Zakroff. Hi, Laura, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing good. It's a huge day for me. It's like wrestling Christmas, and I'm a huge pro wrestling guy, so I'm having a good day. My confusion, I'm kind of a layman when it comes to witchcraft. I'm familiar, but of course I'm not practicing. So, and of course I grew up a Catholic boy. So, I am a little bit of a lost in the woods a little bit here. And, when we talk about witchcraft, of course you have stereotypes, so we're going to break down some of the stereotypes today as well with visiting with you, Laura. But I want to get a little bit into the, I want to weave into the weeds a little bit with you today as well, because one of the things that's come on in recent years has been Wicca, and Wiccans tend to kind of throw up the "we're not regular witches," and we're going to say that for a little bit later in the program, and we're going to divinate a little bit in between what's the difference between modern witchcraft and Wicca, and we'll save that for a little bit later. But your new book is Weave the Liminal, and it's Living Modern Traditional Witchcraft. Tell me a little bit about what modern traditional witchcraft and being a modern traditional witch is, as opposed to what the olden days would be in now.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I know a lot of folks think, oh, isn't that an oxymoron? How can it be modern and traditional? Mm-hmm. Modern, of course, refers to that we are living in the modern day, right? This is where we are right now in time, and sometimes we do a bit of time traveling, right? But in theory, we're currently in this century. The traditional goes to refers to folkloric ways, the different practices that have evolved in various cultures over time, as well as tradition doesn't have to be something that is ancient. We make new traditions every day. If you think about some of your family practices of what you maybe do at Easter, right? So it's coming up not too far from now.
Yep.
Some people have like, oh, well, we have the ham, but other people go, no, we're going to have a lamb instead. You know, so that what gets handed down in families or evolves over time, traditions can be ancient, but they can also be something that just started last week and will be carried on for centuries from now. So with modern traditional witchcraft, we're pulling upon the past, we're pulling upon the folklore and those old practices, but we're viewing them through a modern lens. And a very simple way of looking at that is if you have, you need to make a fire, sure, you can sit there with some tinder and the flint and get it going. But if you had a lighter, and you'd probably want to use that lighter or use those matches, right? So using the tools that are available to us now to continue to explore our practices. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Now, you brought something up that's very interesting. I have a friend that is here in the Twin Cities that's considered quite the authority when it comes to witchcraft. And one of the things that he and I have had talks about when it comes to his, not only his coven, but when it comes to the community here in the Twin Cities, is mm-hmm. is introducing new traditions, yet maintaining the traditional, and how let's just call it what it is, how witches can get bitchy about introducing new traditions, or new rituals.
Right.
Talk to me about how you make something a tradition and get people to stick to it. What is it that makes a good tradition, or what is it that you can introduce to make a ritual and make it stick? What does it take to make something a ritual, or what does it take to make something stick with people? That what is it that makes it attractive, or what is it that makes something a ritual, or makes it ritualistic,
or attractive? I think the number one thing, is it working, and is it relative? Mm-hmm. So if for some folks, when you look at the example of the Great Rite, which is something that's evolved in Wicca, and you can go and see it in other different religious paths. You can even say that transubstantiation in Catholicism is a version of that. But some people tend to look at it as very heterosexual, heteronormative, that you must have a priest and you must have a priestess and they must be, you know, cisgendered and all of that. But it's more a symbolic rite. So you could have two men, two women, two non-binary people, any sort of mix. So being able to update a tradition where it works for the people who are doing it today, and that we are considering and questioning and really learning about why something was done. I think that's one of the hardest issues, is that people, especially when they're following, you know, coming to a pagan path of some sort, right? You're coming often from an Abrahamic background where you have the book, right? This is the book. This is how it's done. You're not allowed to question it. This is how it goes. Except in Judaism, where technically the whole fun thing is question everything, was all and all the side notes, right, in the margins. Mm-hmm. But people tend to think, okay, well, there's no exploration. I just need to read the book and then do the things. But that's not how witchcraft works. It's about exploration and experience. So you need to know not just how to do something, but why you're doing something. And everything, you know, a tradition, a ritual, something that was written down by a human, well, that can be changed. You're another human. You can update that experience. So I think that is the key thing, is it something that's currently relevant, working, and is fully explained about why we are doing it. To do things just because they were done before without understanding why is pretty silly and not very effective, especially for a long term.
So there has to be something that feels authentic about what you're doing as well. What is authenticity when it comes to witchcraft?
That's a great question. So authenticity is is the practice working for you? In the 90s, in paganism particularly, there was a lot of discussion, I call the authenticity wars, where, especially with traditional, which is like, well, I come from this lineage, or, you know, this was passed down by my grandmother, and a whole lot of people really, really so focused about where their practice was coming from, rather than, is it working for you? And yes, you can have a lineage that was passed on by your great grandmother and goes down, and who was a Rosicrucian and who was a Freemason. And, you know, this was done in Yugoslavia. Those things are also great. But a practice that someone who doesn't have that background, but starts to read a whole bunch of different books and starts actually doing the rituals and devising them, that's an authentic practice too. It doesn't have to be ancient. It doesn't have to be unbroken. It can be something that is relatively new if it works. And to me, that's where authenticity is. Is it working for you and your path? What other people might think of your path is really not so important, because it's not their path. But your path is your own.
So let me ask you this. If you do have something that feels authentic to, I don't want to say majority, but to, let's say, half of the covens in different areas, and maybe to half the covens in other areas, they don't think it feels as right as it does, and they take it out of their practices. Mm-hmm. Do you find that things die out and eventually come back like trends?
Yes. Often because some people will just knock things out because they're like, oh, I don't really understand it. I didn't ask why. And so we get rid of it. And things that work and things that have a purpose have a tendency to stick around and be revitalized, especially if there's been a lot of, let's say, bad press or miscommunication about what something is. Like when people like to quote the Wiccan Read, they think, oh, it's eight words. They quote the end of it. But the entire thing is many different couplets that there are some guidelines. It's like telling the punchline of a joke, but not knowing what the joke is if you're just quoting the last thing. So many people just get these little tidbits and they think, oh, I have the full understanding, and oh, this doesn't work. But again, if you do the research, if you sit there and, you know, think about the rituals, do the various practices, understand what the ingredients are, understand why the lunar phases are what they are and rituals are done at the new moon or the full moon or the waxing moon, it suddenly starts to make a lot more sense, because you're going with the grain instead of against the pattern of things.
Understandable. Let's get a little bit into exactly who can be a witch and why, and what it takes to be a witch. Is it anybody who can just come along and say, you know what, Laura, I'm not feeling myself. Can I just jump into this thing and do it? Can I just be one right now?
I'm not going to argue with them.
No,
I really feel that if anybody who's called to this practice, if you're fascinated by witchcraft and you just feel like you don't fit into, you know, an Abrahamic path, or you feel like there's something else, there's something other in the world, the idea of that there is more than what we see in the world. There is the realm of the unseen. That might be the spirits. It might be working with ancestors, gods, you know, plant spirits, whatever it is. It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter where you live. You can tap into that practice and be a witch. People will talk about, you know, natural born witches versus initiated witches. And you know, I think all human beings have abilities. Society often shuts many of those things down. You think like with children, right? They'll talk about their invisible friends and the things that they know. And they're like, well, how do you know that? You can't know that your grandmother passed away before you were even born. And it's like, well, they are tapped into the world, and society hasn't shut down their brains yet to say, oh, that's just silly. That's just your imagination. So I think we tend to spend most of our adult lives trying to undo those little confines of society. I do think that a lot of people do have what we can call psychic abilities, do have more of a tendency to see more, like, you know, the intuition, the gut intuition of things. But you don't have to fit a stereotype. You don't have to dress all in black, though it is very convenient unless you have a white cat. Cat hair on all the things. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the stereotype of you have to read the tarot and have a crystal ball and work with herbs and poison things and all those different stuff. It's like, you can be an accountant and work numbers with magic. You can be a hospice worker who helps people transition to the other side. It doesn't have to be this stereotype, this very narrow concept that even, you know, modern day media tends to glamorize, of like, especially the Instagram witch and all these things. Like, yeah, though, that's great to be young and pretty and cover yourself in crystals and giant smudge sticks, apparently. But a witch can be anybody, any gender, any age, any background.
What do you say to people who say, isn't this an affront to a religious God, or my, is this an affront to religion? If I decide I want to become a witch, aren't I doing something towards what I was supposed to be or what I'm supposed to be? Am I being mm-hmm. bad by doing this?
Bad in the right way? Well, many people do see witchcraft as a religion. There some people only say it's a practice. For me, it is a spiritual path, mm-hmm. and I can connect to the divine, and not just you know, many people have, you know, if you talk to a Jew and a Catholic and a Protestant and a Muslim and a Hindu, you're going to get all different concepts of what God looks like. What is the divine? And paganism in its many ways, whether it's Wicca, witchcraft, Druid, Santeria, and people might not like being under the pagan umbrella for that, but all those other paths, right, that we see as the non-traditional ways are still connecting to the world. And when you think about the state of society and the state of the planet right now, we have been so disconnected because people say, well, man has dominion over the earth and you can do whatever you want with it. Well, that has got us a polluted planet. It has, you know, an incredible amount of people who aren't getting enough food, a place to live, all these different things. As we've thrown the planet out of whack, we've thrown society out of whack. And to me, witchcraft is a way to connect back with ourselves, our fellow humans, civilization, as well as being in harmony with the planet. And if that isn't being spiritual and in touch with God in, you know, even the barest concept, I'm not sure what else is.
Do you feel by becoming a witch or becoming pagan that you have become more in touch with God, or that you've through channeling through the earth that you've tapped into a different line of God?
I think that's one way of putting it. And it depends on, you know, again, how do you see God? Is it a guy in the sky with a big white beard, or is, you know, God the pattern of the universe? Or is it a goddess from Greece from thousands of years ago? Is it Kali Ma from Hindu mythology? Is it, you know, the spirit of a place? So all of those things are possible. And, you know, humanity has been working with the spirits of the land and of, you know, having myths that revolve around God's deities for thousands of years before the Abrahamic religions took hold. So, you know, it's not that strange of a concept. We've just kind of narrowed our focus probably in the last couple centuries, and we need to open them back up again.
Is that what we're missing? I mean, because you look at society these days, and it seems like we've become, as a society, we disconnect quite a bit. I mean, we sit on our machines and we talk about how lonely we feel, and we don't really get to know our neighbors anymore, and we've really become more solitary. And we talk about, really, you hear people talk about how lonely they are, or they talk about how it doesn't seem like we really are connected anymore. We really have disconnected. Yeah. Is witchcraft about reconnecting, not only just to the earth or reconnecting to spiritually, but is it about reconnecting to a community?
Yes. It's reconnecting to yourself and finding that you are sacred, that, you know, humanity is worthwhile, that we are, you know, if God made the world, it doesn't matter what myth you're coming from, right, then we are part of God's creation. So we are part of the divine. And we've had so many centuries of saying human beings are filthy, we're sinful, we're this, we're that, we're all these negative things. But rabbits aren't worrying about that, or neither are horses or trees, right? They're not worrying about whether they are sacred or not. They know they are part of the system, right? They are still connected. And so I think, you know, part of the reason why the book is called Weave the Liminal is I use the weaving mythology that we are all threads in a kind of giant loom. It's kind of the metaphor that I'm working with, that we all intertwine, right? We're making patterns with every person that we interact with, that our ancestors, you know, are the threads that we come down from. And, you know, the actions that we do also change the pattern. So all of this is being made in the moment. And the more we're aware of those connections, the easier it is to connect with ourselves and each other. And I think that's exactly, you know, if you can change yourself, you can change the world as well. And you can connect so much deeper.
I'm curious, too. I've seen some things, and I've seen this, too, through my friend here in the Twin Cities, that when he takes people under his wing, I see that people have a change in self-esteem. Mm. Talk to me a little bit about what it is about when people take up witchcraft, what it is that it does for their self-esteem.
I think the first thing is recognizing that you have power. And, you know, that's a kind of a loaded word. What is power? That you have the ability to affect the world around you, starting with just your mind, and it can filter out through there. So, you know, when society says, oh, you know, especially considering anything paranormal, right? That stuff's just weird and marginal and, you know, everybody's crazy, right? That sort of dismissing of what is standard, even though for thousands of years, you know, look at all the myths, look at all the stories, look at all the art that all these different cultures have been creating that talk about the other, right? The outside the normal, right? The extraordinary. And when you start to realize that you're perceiving, that you're having intuition, that you suddenly you're like, oh, well, I feel like the right thing to do is make this tea right now. I'm not sure why, but this is my intuition in it. You tend to go, oh, well, maybe I'm crazy, or maybe, you know, this isn't a valid thing. People kind of feel sheepish about it. And then you realize, wait, this is part of humanity. Again, going back to, you know, the animals know where to go in migration, right? They can follow their inner magnetic compasses and all of the science that is behind that. As human beings in modern society, we're told that, you know, what your vote doesn't matter, what you do to the planet, oh, it doesn't really matter. And so we get disenfranchised by all of these things that make us easier to technically control from a political standpoint. But if you realize that, wait, you do have an effect on your destiny, that you can help other people and interact with them and change their lives and change your own, suddenly you're like, wait, I am worth something, and other people worth something too. So suddenly your value on life and the living here now versus worrying about what might happen after you die, it really shifts your whole focus. And so you can take control as much as we can, right? We're still kind of ships on the ocean of life, but you suddenly feel like you have an oar so that you can, you know, an oar and a rudder so that you can change your direction instead of just being stuck floating to the currents. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. And actually, that brings up a very interesting point that I want to ask you about, that whole what happens when we die. I'm going to ask you about that in a second here. But first, every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. Well, you can't put a price tag on your stories. Now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth is when it comes time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof. Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage. You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet, so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash it out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas. Welcome back to Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennis, sitting in for Dave Schrader. Laura Tempest Zakroff is our guest, and we're talking about her new book, Weed the Liminal, Living Modern Traditional Witchcraft. And before the break, Laura, we were talking about how witchcraft was lifting people's self-esteem and giving them a little bit more control. And you brought up an interesting thing and sparked an interesting question in my head. And that is, it had to do with where we go when we die. And interestingly enough, when we talk about witchcraft as a religion, every religion has a dogma, or every religion has a story as to an end game or what happens where we go when we die. I mean, Catholicism, of course, has heaven, and every religion has some place where we go. In Catholicism, of course, there's a heaven, a purgatory, and a hell, or a heaven and a hell, depending on which version you want to believe.
And don't forget limbo.
And limbo. Well, purgatory, limbo, I guess, sure. That too, yeah. Although the limbo, if you like the Caribbean limbo, you got to be limber. but with witchcraft, where is it we go when we die? What is the belief?
Well, personally, I like to call it the primordial cauldron, which is that, our spirit energy, it goes back into sort of the primordial ooze and can get lottled back out into another form. Some people, and it really depends on the folkloric tradition, so people of Celtic background might say the Summerlands. And so you go to a place of, eternal joy and rejoined with your family. If you're looking at Greek mythology, the Greeks also had many different levels of the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And most cultures do, whether you're looking at, Japan or South America, there is a sense of other life. And so it's really, I think, more of a personal thing. Some people just believe you zap out of existence. But I think if you look at, I like the primordial cauldron, in a sense of, if we have memories and we have inclinations and inspirations in our lives that don't quite make sense, you might come from a, Irish background and you're drawn to something in a Middle Eastern culture that you just can't explain. And so that's where people, I think, get a little bit of past lives, is that you might have these remnants of previous life experiences that are kind of interconnected. And so I don't really worry about it too much because I'm more focused on the here and now.
Okay.
But I like the idea that, we can, cross over into another side and you're just going to start over into another experience. Or I also like the idea that there are guides. We have the concept of the mighty dead, that the recently deceased, the people of power and inspiration who have passed on, can be called upon or beseeched to aid us now. Whether you consider that angel, a spirit, a god, the ancestor concept, that is something that's really real and present. So I kind of believe, I kind of really pretty relaxed about these things. I'm not going, oh my God, I have to worry about, heaven or hell. Because I did grow up Catholic as well. I keep joking that I'm going to write a book called Witchcraft for Recovering Catholics.
Okay.
And there's some really great Catholic, the whole saints, especially if you work with Italian Catholicism.
Yeah.
It is a very, very interesting, fascinating roots that work into there. You're seeing a lot of remnants, even in, if you look at some of the, in modern day UK, where you've got like Bridget, right? St. Bridget is a culmination of many different goddess or lady energies, right? They were kind of put into one spirit. It's like the way to bring the deities and the spirits of the old religions into the new ones is to kind of, you make a convert by bringing that deity in. You also find that in Islam with some of the prophets. If you go into areas where there is a certain ancestor in the village that they say, oh, this is Baba so-and-so, he is our patriarch, or this is our matriarch, you find that those, if you follow the myth, they might predate Islam, because that is an ancestor that was venerated in that village for centuries, even thousands of years, and they get brought into the new religion because people don't want to leave them behind, right? They're kind of that familiar spirit, that an adversary. What's the opposite of an adversary? I'm having a, I'm still working on that first cup of tea here.
I hear you. Yeah.
You know, with the saints, right? The idea of Catholic saints is that they can work to speak to God, right? Speak to the divine on our behalf.
Yeah.
And so that intermediary, right?
Yep.
And people like that idea. It's sort of a stepping stone to finding your own autonomy and your own personal power. But it's nice to think that you have a kind of spiritual an army or support system behind you that can help you get things accomplished.
So I'm wondering if we can talk candidly for a second here, Laura, because I'm curious. I'm very curious. Coming from a Catholic background and you launch into witchcraft, I have to know, does any of the Catholic guilt pop up as you take that journey into witchcraft? Do the messages hit you as you're going into witchcraft saying, am I doing the right thing by going into it? Do you, because of course you've got the, you know, you shouldn't participate in divination and all this other thing. Do you, as you're going through your own personal journey into witchcraft, do you feel like maybe you're committing sins that you shouldn't be committing as you're going into it?
I know folks who definitely go through that, and it tends to be a very sort of new witch, unloading baggage. And it doesn't matter what path you're coming from. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always going to be some baggage that you need to sift through and unload. Though for me, my family often called me the little heathen or a little pagan from my earliest memories.
Yeah,
I think it's and we the liminal. I write a little bit about when I was in first grade. We went to Catholic school, and this, of course, the church was on the same ground. So we did a little field trip down to the church, and we were talking about the altar and up there. And well, both my brothers, who were much older than me, were altar boys, right, the acolytes. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to go sit up on the altar where my brother sat. I was very determined to do that.
Yeah.
And I got sent to the principal's office. And I was very indignant because I didn't understand, or I couldn't find any reason for, just because I was a girl, that I couldn't be in that sacred place. Or, you know, now, of course, now there are female acolytes, but yes, back then there wasn't.
Ooh. Yep.
And so very early on, a lot of the dogma didn't make sense to me. My father's Jewish.
Okay.
So around third grade, I was told that my father was going to hell.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we're like, I come home and I'm like, Mommy, oh my gosh. And she's like, oh, honey, we really don't believe in that. Which is, my mom was also a Catholic school teacher. She taught religion in high school. She's retired now. But it always kind of amused me that my mom was like, very, very Catholic, but at the same time going, that's just not something we believe. And she's a very religious, very spiritual person, and she knows the Bible inside and out, and all of the, you know, Vatican II and all of that. She's pretty much an expert on Catholicism. It comes over that, what is sin? What are all these different things? And I can't reconcile myself to those concepts. I find that the path of witchcraft and the connections that are here make much more sense to me. So there really isn't guilt. I'm not worried about those things because I've seen things and I know them to be true.
You've seen things and you know them to be true. Let's leave it at that right there. Because when we come back, I want to talk about some of those things that you've seen, and then we'll also get into some other things about witchcraft. And I want to talk about the separations in witchcraft and the different types of witchcraft and the difference between Wicca and white magic and black magic and the differences between the two. I want to get into that in the second part of our program. But first, as you folks know, as Dave's been on location, we've been doing the best of as far as Theater of the Mind. So we've grabbed from our archives one of the best of Theater of the Mind. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another story from our archives of Theater of the Mind.
My Creation of Terror, the real-life experience of Dan Hartman. I had read a book about the famed Philip experiment. The idea that thought could somehow give life to a paranormal experience, and it blew me away. I read everything I could find, watched every video out there, and decided I had to try this for myself. That proved to be the single scariest mistake of my life. I set about creating a character. I wanted to see if I could imagine a creature that I could somehow control and send to frighten my friends. What can I say? I was a stupid teenager. I was obsessed, and I just wanted to see this for myself. So I methodically planned out the character from its look to its backstory, wrote about it every day to train my mind to focus on it and to set my intention so that I could bring my creation to life. I tried to convince a few of my buddies to help me. I guess they thought this was just too weird science for them, and they declined, telling me I was just wasting my time and acting like an ass. So now I knew who my targets would be, and I couldn't wait to unfurl my little experiment on them. After close to 60 days of very intense focus and determination, I started to try and communicate with the creature. Now, I don't even want to write out the name of this thing because I'm worried it will call something back into my life that I don't ever want to face again. I began by using the Ouija. Then I went to mirror scrying, and when that didn't work, I tried conjuring it with a pentagram that I drew on my floor with powdered chalk so I could easily clean it up and not be caught by my parents. Nothing seemed to be working, or so I thought. After my fifth night of experiments, I finally gave up, sure that I had wasted my time just as my friends predicted. But it was around 2 a.m, and I was finally starting to fall asleep, when I heard what could only be described as the sound of scratching coming from under my bed. At first, I thought maybe it's just a piece of paper that blew under my bed and the fan that I used to keep on for sleeping at night must just be blowing it around. Well, what can I say? It made sense to me at the time. But then the scratching noises began to get louder, and they seemed to be running under the entire length of my bed, from the head of the bed to the foot and back again. I tried to convince myself that it was just my imagination and that I'd spent just too much time focused on creepy things. It was starting to play with my perceptions. Then it happened. The bed thumped, like someone pushed it from under, making the bed land hard on the floor. That shook me from my near slumber and definitely caught my attention. Everything was silent except the sound of the fan. And I wondered, did I just dream that moment? Was I caught between awake and asleep? Then the bed lurched again. This time it felt like the entire frame had been thumped and sent at least 4 inches into the air. It landed with a loud thud. My heart was in my throat. My palms were instantly sweaty, and I began breathing hard. I thought to myself, what in God's name was that? That's when I saw the closet door begin to rattle. The knob seemed to be twisting back and forth. The door shook in its frame. My eyes opened to the size of baseballs as I strained to see in the dimly lit room. Then the door popped the latch and slowly squeaked open, revealing nothing but a dark, inky, gaping pit behind it. I could hear movement coming from the closet, something shuffling slowly. And then a low, steady, growling noise began from under my bed. The bed began to shake like a small tremor, and I saw what appeared to be a large, dark form slowly emerge into my room from the closet. It stood upright like a man, but it was broad. Its head was large and oddly shaped, almost like a giant dog with horns. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. I just lay there, staring. This was just how I had imagined my creature to look. After 60 days of intense concentration, I was seeing my creation standing before me. But that didn't answer the other question. What was making my bed shake? What was underneath and shaking my bed? I was trapped. It stood there staring, and the growling from under my bed began again. I slowly raised my blankets up to my face, poked my head under there, and laid motionless, praying that whatever magical blanket gods were watching, they would be at the ready and protect me. Then the bed stopped shaking. The growl faded into the sound of the fan, and then there was silence. I lay there for what felt like hours, but I'm sure it was no more than 10 to 15 minutes, still barely breathing, when I began to lower the blanket from my face to scan my surroundings. That's when my blood ran cold. This hulking creature was positioned over my bed, reached out its claw-like hand and ripped back the blankets, leaned in slowly so its face was only inches from my own. I could see the definition in the long snout. Its glassy, large eyes stared into mine, and it sneered in a voice that was a mix between a hiss and a groan.
"Shouldn't mess with things you don't understand, boy."
I swear to God, my heart stopped. I was terrified, and then it backed up. More like floated backwards towards the door of my closet. Then it lowered its head once more and said,
"Don't make me come back. We don't play games."
And the door slammed with the might of 10 angry teenage girls. I flicked on the light in my room and my bedroom door burst open. My parents charged in. "What the hell? It's the middle of the night. Why are you slamming doors and banging around up here?" I was speechless. I just quietly apologized and ducked back under the covers. My parents left the room and I just lay there, staring at the ceiling, waiting for the rise of the sun. So be careful what you want to focus on, what you think about, because you may just get it.
Beyond the Darkness listeners, if you like this show, then you need to check out CarCast, because it's the longest running automotive podcast. And if you're anything like Dave and I, and you know a little bit about cars, and you need to know more about cars, then CarCast is definitely the podcast you need to check out. CarCast is a twice-weekly automotive show hosted by Adam Carolla, wrestling superstar Bill Goldberg, and Matt the Motorator D'Andrea. It's the only show of its kind that explores all aspects of the automotive space, from the performance aftermarket to new car buying and the future of the automotive industry. The guys answer your questions, they offer advice, and feature guests from the automotive industry and celebrity car enthusiasts. Listen to CarCast with Goldberg and Motorator Matt D'Andrea every Wednesday, and Adam Carolla with Motorator every Friday on the Podcast One app or iTunes Podcasts.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennis in for Dave Schrader on a Sunday. He's off filming his brand new TV show. I'm not going to give you any details, real details about it, but I will tell you this. Dave has shared just a tiny bit with me, and it does look really good, folks. It's coming up in the fall. He'll let you know all the details about it in the coming weeks when they let him give you details, and it does look really spooky, and there has been some great paranormal activity involved in the show. I can't wait for you guys to see it. It looks really good. He's doing some good stuff out there on the road. I want to remind you as well, if you're listening to this show before 2 p.m. Central Time and you're in Minnesota, come on out to Coon Rapids. The Coon Rapids VFW IWI is in action again this afternoon, 2 p.m. bell time. I'm your ring announcer and, of course, evil vice president. We've got a great... it's my only therapy for the month, folks. You gotta take the good with the bad, and I'm bad today. But we've got a great main event coming up at the Coon Rapids VFW. Heavy Metal Lore, who is our heavyweight champion, is taking on Tommy Spider Baby Saturday, our U.S. champion, and a champion versus champion main event. That's coming up this afternoon, 2 p.m. bell time. That's our start over at the Coon Rapids VFW. And then, of course, we will go straight through, no intermission, to get you home in time for WrestleMania tonight, because it's a huge wrestling weekend. It's like it's like wrestling Christmas this weekend, as WrestleMania and WWE take over the rest of the weekend, as they've pretty much had all weekend. But if you're a wrestling fan, you've been overwhelmed all weekend between New Japan, Ring of Honor, NXT, WWE. By God, you're probably in a coma by now. Our guest today is an intriguing one. Laura Tempest Ackroff has a brand new book out there, Weave the Liminal, Living Modern Traditional Witchcraft. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about getting into the craft and about the differences in the craft. And let's start off about rights. Let's talk a little bit about rights and what rights are, Laura. I know what rituals are and what rituals are, but I'm confused as to what rights are. What are rights?
All right. So rights is an acronym that I use as a learning tool for the book for crafting your own path. And it gives you 5 points to consider and do your research on in order to craft your own practice for yourself. And so first is R is roots. So your roots are where you come from. And that can be genetic. That can also be the land that you currently are living on. It can be the city that you come from. It can be if you'd say you're adopted into a family. It's that family that you're adopted into. All of those things make up your roots. Like, what are those main influencers of your physical body, right? And mm-hmm. of your mind. So roots. And then the next is I is inspiration. So what inspires you? For some people, it's like having a fascination with the tarot or runes. You're like, I want to learn more about that. Or I want to learn more about herbalism. Or there is this deity or myth from a different culture that I really want to learn more about. I understand why I'm drawn to it, but I want to explore that. So inspiration takes into all of the things that aren't connected to your roots that you want to learn more about. So if you're interested in herbalism, the idea is that you get out there, you work with herbs, you can take classes, the same with tarot or any of the other kind of, we can say the skill set that we might associate with witchcraft, whether that's making candles or working with oils. And then, so the next letter is T for time. And time is one of those things that most people don't think about. You know, like, oh yeah, I can see where I'm coming from and what inspires me. But very few people really sit down and look at how their social and, you know, family obligation schedule, how their body clock, right? If you are someone who doesn't like to get up early in the mornings, that, you know, and you work better late at night, that is going to affect how you do your rituals and your practices and how you interact with the world. So I tend to get up a little later, where my partner, he, you know, can get up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and that's his best time. So knowing when your body works best for you. Mm-hmm. And time also includes the lunar schedule. So considering the phases of the moon, as we are supposedly about 90% water. And if you've ever lived by an ocean or a lake, you can see how the full moon affects tides, right? Especially if there's a storm surge coming, a full moon high tide during a storm surge is often catastrophic. It's very, you know, it has a deep effect. You have very, very low tide and very high tide. So that same effect, like there are people, you know, the police departments often hire or you schedule more folks during a full moon because there tends to be an increase in activity, right? We have that idea of a lunatics, where the new moon tends to be often a quieter, more kind of what we call a planting time, where you're more insular, you're in the dark, you're thinking about these things. But some people experience spikes in depression at the new moon. So checking with your, you know, sort of journaling your personal experiences and noting how they might correlate to the moon can have a really important effect on your practice. And then we have what I call the solar seasons, which some people consider it that the wheel of the year, which is a fairly modern concept. It's really only came about in the 1940s or 50s in the modern context that we know. But basically looking at the equinoxes and the solstices, equinoxes being that equal day, that has a certain psychology to it as your longest day and your longest night, right? Or winter solstice and the summer solstice there. And then what's the cross-quarter days of Samhain and Beltane and Lunasa and Imbolc and, you know, all these various names. That's a set of eight, but you might, maybe you're coming from a Slavic tradition where there's going to be different harvesting seasons or different important saints days, or maybe you live in a town that there's a big festival. You know, these things are all important days and events that you can work into how you practice and how you look at the turning of the wheel, how it affects your lives. So all of this can be incorporated. So that's encompassed into time. And then for E, we have environment. And this is another thing that most people don't think about is, especially in the 90s, there was a big push of like, oh, well, I'm studying, Scottish witchcraft. Have you ever been to Scotland? Well, no, but I'm reading this book on it, or Italian witchcraft or Irish witchcraft or all these different things. There was all these different themed cultural witchcrafts that were coming out in books. And people here, especially in the United States, like we are often an amalgamation. You know, it's very rare that you find somebody who's been here for a while that is only all Italian. And even then it's like, well, is that Northern Italian or is that Sicilian? Like they're different things, right? We have these lineages, we have these roots, but we're living here and we are tied to the land that we currently living on. If you live in the desert versus living in Appalachia versus living in the Pacific Northwest, these are all very different environments. Minnesota, right? You have the highest, it was at the highest highs and lowest lows comparatively. Yes. That is a very specific thing. And all the water that you have there in the lakes, all of these ecosystems are unique. And if you are attuned to the seasons of where you live, that can be really powerful for your practice versus going, well, okay, this tradition came from England. And well, even though nothing is growing yet where I live, I'm in Arizona. So, the growing season is a different time of year. It's like, it's very hard to take these supposedly agricultural, feast days and Sabbats and apply them somewhere where it doesn't make sense. So it's more important, I believe, to look around you and respond to your local seasons, than to try to tie it into something else that doesn't really affect your personal practice every day. So that is environment. And the last one is star. And star is for your moral and ethical guide to the world around you. So what's your guiding star, right? Like, how are you plotting your path? What do you want to do as a witch? What do you want to accomplish? And really, how, what do you consider, what is good? What is bad? I don't like to say, evil or anything like that, but, what are your perspectives on, how do you interact with the world? What is your code of, conduct for yourself and your consent, which can be, can be very grandiose, and you can pull from, any sort of system in the world, or I like to say there's kind of three, which is, one, take care of yourself, two, take care of the people around you, and number three, try not to be a jerk to other people. And that's kind of a good start as an ethical moral guide.
That is a very good start. Now, see, everything you've described in that acronym in rites is not anything that wouldn't be, what's the way I want to put this? Isn't anything that isn't, it's not evil. It's not anything that isn't already established in any religion going forward. That isn't anything that's sacrilegious. That isn't anything what's the word I'm looking for here, Laura? It's not anything that's
It's very logical.
Yes, it's all very logical. And it's all stuff that people are doing anyways that are God-fearing Christians, or people that people are professing on TV, or it's stuff that you're seeing on, I don't know, you turn on the Today Show, just for example, and they're, hey, here's a new article on why you're feeling cranky because you're not, it has something to do with your body clock. And like you mentioned in one part of the rights acronym, there's everything you just mentioned there is something that's being mentioned in different articles or something that we're already professing or striving to do. To me, it just seems like it's just ways that we're already trying to live anyways.
Or we should, but we're often not conscious of because we're so wrapped up into, are we doing it right? Especially, I think that's kind of the bane of modern society right now, especially online, right? There's someone who's saying you're doing it wrong. And, you know, just to have a sense of, moral superiority, or I think a lot of people who do the you're doing it wrong game are often coming from a very insecure place themselves, right? They want to feel that they're doing it right and everybody else is doing it wrong. But rarely are those people offering the perspective of, well, you might be doing this wrong, but here's a better way to consider it. Right. It's mm-hmm. It's more a matter of like, I need to make my declaration, but I'm not actually helping anyone. And so people get very they kind of get sort of caught up in fear of that they're going to be called out for something in case they made a misstep. But we're human beings. We are going to screw things up. That's how we learn. And if we take the time to be more conscious, this is how we talked earlier in the first half about connections, right? Being that witchcraft can help you be more connected to yourself, to your community, to the planet. If we're so focused on, got to get the car, got to go to work, got to do this thing, I got to bring the kids here, you know, this got to, you don't stop and think. You know, you don't have that moment of reflection of what is my body doing and why do I feel this way and am I taking the necessary steps? Had a woman in one of the workshops I teach, you know, was like, oh, well, how am I going to make time to do ritual? And, you know, she's like, I got to walk the dog. I got to do this. I got to do that. I'm like, okay, is walking a dog for you, letting the dog out into the backyard, or do you actually go and take a walk with the dog? And she's like, well, I take, you know, twice a day, I take a walk, you know, 10, 15 minutes. I'm like, well, instead of focusing on when the dog is going to poop, you know, and you got to clean it up, Take a look at the world around you. What are the trees doing? What are your neighbors up to? What animals are around? What are the insects? You know, what's the light like? What's the sky doing? What are the clouds doing? Instead of, you know, being on your phone or worrying about something that you can't have any effect over, taking the time to take stock of what is happening around you in the world is incredibly grounding and also empowering at the same time, because then you start noticing the important things of like, oh, well, the trees are about to, you know, they're going to be in blossom in another week or so. And, oh, it'll be a good time for planting, or, you know, oh, it's a good time to get working into the garden, or I need to start thinking about doing something else in the house. And so you start to think about what is the pattern around you. Versus distracting yourself with, you know, what's happening on Facebook or Twitter, or, you know, distractions are great. But if you're looking for more time to connect, then you take those opportunities, which means that 15 minutes when walking the dog is a great time to have a meditative experience and to observe the world around you.
That it is. And and you're right. It just seems like there's a definite issue with being able to focus, and focus is a huge thing. And speaking of focus, some people out there may be having an issue with digestive troubles. I know I did. Weight gain. I know I did. Low energy. I know I did. Achy joints. I definitely have issues with those. If you've been struggling with any of those, Dr. Stephen Gundry says you're not alone, and he knows the real cause. Dr. Gundry is one of the most famous and well-respected diet experts in the world, and he says that most of those problems aren't about lack of exercise or even genetics. The real cause is leaky gut. Leaky gut happens when you eat certain foods that contain lectins, which are tiny little particles that are tears or holes in your digestive tract. These particles then wreak havoc on your insides, causing poor digestion, fatigue, achy joints and muscles, brain fog, and even worse health issues. And you want to know what the solution is? It's easy. You could just go to a little video and watch that video right now. Well, don't do it right now. Do it after this interview, of course. You just need to know a few foods to avoid. That's it. There's just a couple of foods to avoid. Dr. Gundry has that video right now that you can watch describing exactly what those foods are. People who watch the video have reported more energy, smoother BMs, slimmer waistlines, and a stronger, healthier body. If you finally want to tackle that leaky gut, just watch the video at TotalRestore2.com. That's TotalRestore2. That's the number 2.com. Dave and I have both been working with Dr. Gundry. We've both had success in tackling those digestive issues, the low energy, the achy joints. I've been feeling much better since working with Dr. Gundry. Dave has too. He's been out on the road. He's been noticing a lot more energy. I've been dealing with some achy joints that have been getting better. I've been having a lot more higher energy. My digestive issues have gone away, and it's all thanks to Dr. Gundry. You want to go to TotalRestore2.com, watch the video, and find out how Dr. Gundry can help you. All right, let's continue on with Laura Tempest-Zakroff. And Laura, I got to ask you this question, and it's a burning question in my head. Now, of course, we've been talking about the positives about witchcraft. And the book is Weave the Liminal, Living Modern Traditional Witchcraft. And we've been talking a lot about modern traditional witchcraft and about the positives of, but I wouldn't be doing my audience a service, or I'd be doing them a disservice if I didn't tackle the other side or the elephant in the room. And that is, I would have a lot of my audience members who would say, Tim, you didn't grill her about black magic and about the other side, because there's always a yin and a yang. There's always good and evil. There's always a dark side to the light side. And we've talked a lot about the light side of witchcraft. Tell me where the dark side of magic comes in here. There's got to be a darker side of magic. And in your experience, Laura, has there been a darker side of magic? Have you dabbled in black magic, or do you even mess with black magic? And is that part of the whole experience?
I don't define magic as being black or white. I talk a little bit about this on the book, and if you look up the fallacy of black or white magic, I have a blog post about it. And essentially, magic is energy, is the simplest way to define it, right? To cause change in the world. And change in any format has negative and positive consequences. And whether those consequences are deemed negative or positive tend to be a matter of perspective. So, you know, people are like, oh, love and light. And you know, that's not, I had that little snide tone to it, but people tend to have this, all the fluff, right? Mm-hmm. Healing magic, right? If you are doing a healing spell for someone who is fighting cancer or a bacterial infection, essentially, you're out to destroy those cells, right? Or to destroy the bacteria.
Right.
And we have made the moral, ethical choice that the person's life or that being's life is more important than those cancer cells or that bacteria. I think the bacteria would probably have an argument with you about it thinks it's probably deserves to do its own thing too.
Okay.
But we make that choice. So there is a positive, right? But there's also a negative involved. If you do a spell to get a new job, rarely does that job just appear out of nowhere, right? Like, whoop, someone just created a position, right? Often someone has to lose a job. Something has to give way in order for you to get that position. You know, so you would hope that Bob, who lost his job, is probably finding the next best path for him, right? Maybe he's going to find something that's a better fit, and that's how that all works. And it comes down to accepting responsibility, to consider what the possible consequences are that you can see and perceive, right? We still are never going to be able to perceive all of them because there's so many different facets. But you make that choice that this is worthwhile. And so I don't really like... You know, there's also the other connotations that the terms black and white magic have evolved over the centuries to really be rooted in some racist undertones.
Okay.
If you do enough digging, you know, to say, oh, black magic, and people tend to think, oh, that's voodoo, it's this. And they're like, all those practices, you know, that are done by African people or people of color, right? Those are not negative practices. Those are powerful practices. Those are healing practices. And it tends to be that because people of color have done them, because women have done them, right? Going to the 15th century with the grimoire traditions all the way up into the 18th centuries when you had the rise of the witch hunts. And it really wasn't about black or white magic, right? Good and evil. We know that most of that had to do with social economics, that, oh, that widow over there has some land, and so I'm going to accuse her of witchcraft so I can take her land. And the, meanwhile, you had these gentlemen who are using their grimoires, and they'll say that I have been given, you know, by God, the gift of magic, that I was born with magic. You know, so they're using this justification from the Bible that what they were doing is good. But if a person of color, a woman, or somebody who owned land, you know, or had money that they wanted to get a hold of, those people were bad. Those people were doing black magic. And so I really kind of cringe at the use of that. When people get into cursing and hexing and binding, you know, it's also a matter of perspective. If you are doing a binding spell on someone who's an alcoholic so that they don't harm themselves and they don't hurt other people, is that a negative thing? You know, and people could argue about, oh, well, you're affecting their free will. Well, maybe you're actually assisting them more on their path of to be, you know, if, unless they do want to be an alcoholic. And there's so many different things that have to be factored in. What I draw the line is people who just get angry and want to throw, you know, negativity at other people and be like, oh, well, you know, you looked at my boyfriend funny, so I'm going to hex you or something like that. I mean, that's just silly and that's a waste of energy. Mm-hmm. You know, like communicate, like have a communication, talk to people. You can avoid a lot of the crap out there if you just actually had a conversation with some folks and cleared up miscommunication. So that is another factor to come into that. That most people don't think about. You know, there's another thing I want to say about cursing and hexing. And sure. So I am part of a project called We Are Aradia, which is based off of Charles Leland's 1899 book, Aradia, or The Gospel of the Witches. Some people might pronounce it Aradia, and some people might be Aradia, because it's Italian. Mm-hmm. And in that, it talks about this story, a myth that Charles Leland, as a folklorist, had discovered in Italy, about talking about how the goddess Diana sent her daughter, Aradia, down to Earth to teach the people witchcraft, to free them from their oppressors. Right? And there is no... think of them with love. It's nope, you're going to poison them. You're going to make them uncomfortable. You are going to, you know, help them see the error of their ways. And in modern times, when people are worried about, you know, being disenfranchised, that people are being killed because they are trans or queer, and, you know, so many people are in economic hardship, these are things that give people back the power. You know, if you feel like your vote doesn't matter, you can also work some sigils and do volunteering. There's so many different things you can do. And of course, the people who, you know, don't want other people to have rights are going to say, oh, you're doing black magic, you're doing harmful things. And they're like, well, you're also harming people through legislature. You know, that is a negative thing as well. So just because you attribute it to, you know, metaphysical means doesn't make something suddenly, you know, positive or negative or evil or good. It's a matter of what is the change that you want to affect and how are you bettering the world?
Now, you actually just brought up an interesting point. We've had some stories in the past year or two since, and again, we don't bring up a lot of politics on the show, but there have been some stories in the news in the last year or two about different witch groups that have cast spells against President Trump, having to do with his policies and wanting to put different spells on President Trump. It doesn't seem like it's worked at all one way or another. But what is your take on that? I mean, it being that these spells haven't worked, how would you interpret that?
Knowing some of those folks, they cite evidence that they do believe it's working. But for where I come from, I believe that change has to happen at the root level. Mm-hmm. So instead of trying to shoot at the top of the mountain, which didn't happen overnight, right? If you study economics and politics, you can see that this is something that has been in the works for the last 40, 50 years.
Okay.
But what has happened is that so many people kind of stopped participating in their local government, that they're like, oh, I'm not going to vote. It doesn't matter. It's only going to be the big elections I'm going to vote in. But the people who are elected locally eventually get up to the mountain. So if you are taking the time to put people who are more like you into office, you can affect things. It's sure not going to happen overnight. But for example, if you look at you know, was considered the blue wave last November, right? How many women and people of color got into Congress, you know, and got mayor, again, words in the morning, got into their local governments. Mm-hmm. There was such a huge change is because people go, oh, wait, I matter and people like me matter and perhaps I should get more involved locally. And so to me, seeing Spellcraft that gets people focused on looking at their local housing situation, to protect their neighbors, to feed the hungry, to do all the things that are important for your local community, that is a way to cause change. If it makes you feel good to do a binding spell against somebody you've never met and draw angry sigils and set things on fire, if that makes you feel better, that kind of is a process, right? It can be a therapeutic experience. But I feel like people should really focus on what's local, and you can definitely see the change, and you can see it in a very short amount of time.
But what about the old rule of the what's cast about on one person comes back to you three times, or whatever that is, that old rule, you know, the one I'm talking about?
The law of return, which, as I mentioned in the first half with the Wiccan read, right, mm-hmm. Is that people are taking a little tiny segment without fully exploring it.
Okay.
What that says is basically, if you put good into the world, more likely good will come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you put bad into the world, well, you're poisoning the well, right? You got to drink from that well.
Yeah.
At some point. So I don't believe in a karmic scoreboard or, you know, there's some spirit or God going, okay, well, you did one bad thing, so three bad things are going to come back to you. If you're a jerk, jerky things tend to do happen to you. If you're a good person, sometimes good things do happen, but the universe is weird like that. You know, people get cancer who are absolutely good, wonderful people who live healthy. And then there are certainly jerks who are in positions of power who who really don't care about other people. So
and they slide by.
Really, yeah. Weird and strange, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And they slide by. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
So, I look at it as a system of balance, and balance doesn't mean everything is even. Sometimes balance requires there to be extremes in order to sort things out. So I think when you consider doing something, again, if you sit down and go, all right, what are the possible consequences? How is this going to affect me? How is this going to affect other people? And you decide that that is something you want to go forth with and be responsible for, then that's great. You know, magic, though, starts with thought. And there are a lot of people who get up on their high horses and go, oh, the law of three, the law of return, you know, but they're also the same people on Facebook and Twitter yelling and saying nasty things to other people. You know, like, just because it's not a spell, right? I'm using big scare quotes on that one. Just because it's not a spell doesn't mean you're still not putting that out into the world.
But is there such a thing? And I guess I hate to keep hammering this point with you, Laura, but and it's not because I'm not I don't profess to back Trump. I don't profess to back anybody in this mm-hmm. in this question. But is there such a thing as admitting that a spell failed? Because to me, it seems like when I read that story, and I'm not going to keep hammering that story, but to me, it seems like when I look as a passive observer at everything and let's face it, right now, when you look at Donald Trump, it seems like he's the guy's bulletproof. It just seems like nothing anybody's doing. It doesn't matter if you're looking at investigators, if you're looking at witches, if you're looking at anybody who's trying to get after the guy, it doesn't look like anybody's putting a dent in this guy. So is it safe to say that can you actually sit back, like, and let's just say I'm putting a love spell on somebody. It doesn't even have to be Donald Trump. Let's just say I'm trying to put a love spell on somebody and I'm doing the best I can. And I just want this person to be head over heels in love with me. And they just don't want to seem to give me the time of day. And is there just a point where you just go, you know what? It just didn't work.
Some spells you can say that. I find often, though, with love spells in particularly, is that people bite off more than they can chew. because they tend to fixate on the idea of someone, right? They have a fantasy about that person, and they want that person, you know, like, oh, this is how my life is going to be. What you really want is say, oh, I would like to draw someone into my life who's compassionate, who's got a, who has a full-time job, who likes cats, who, you know, likes the same things I do. That is more effective magic than specifically poking in at someone specific to make them fall in love with you. Because often we confuse what we want with what we need.
But isn't that point, the point of a love spell is going after the person you want, not what you need?
What you want, or what you need is love, right? You want and need love, but you think that that particular person is going to bring you the love you need. But you don't know. You know, they might actually be a absolute jerk. They might have things that you're just not compatible. And so that's why I tend to say magic follows the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. And we have thousands of years of folklore that backs that up. Every genie story that you hear, every Baba Yaga story, you know, the three wishes, this and that, right? It says to be specific, but don't be too specific, right? Because you sometimes you get what you want. And it's really not what you need. So a lot more thought and care really needs to be involved in metaphysics rather than just being like, that person, I want them to fall in love with me. You know, it's a great way to be miserable.
I guess that's true when you put it that way. Yeah, that is true.
That's my, you know, there are some spells that I think that they just don't work out because you have the idea of how they're going to be. And it's not very realistic or effective for how the universe works or what you actually do need in your life.
That is true. Now, explain something to me, because I do have some confusion when it comes to Wicca versus traditional witchcraft. I mean, this has been a little hotly debated. I mean, what is the difference between Wicca and traditional witchcraft?
It's like ask two witches, you'll get six answers. Okay. So I tend to look at Wicca as the system that Gerald Gardner, Doreen Valiente, Alexander's, all those folks kind of working in from the 40s up into the 60s and 70s evolved a system, right? So Gerald Gardner said that he was initiated into a witchcraft coven. There's a whole bunch of history and folklore and different ideas about whether that was true or not. But essentially, it is a system of trying to bring back an old religion or to recreate it. And so whether you believe that he was initiated by a long, long line of witches or not, it still is a path that is influenced by Masonic. A lot of Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, Aleister Crowley, the spiritualist movement, many various segments of that into kind of a working practice. And it tends to be very specific and organized within those traditions. So you have Gardnerian, you have Alexandrian, you have the things that evolved here in the United States through Raymond Buckland and Starhawk and Silver Raven, with like all the kind of modern things, and Scott Cunningham, right? That tends to be this somewhat organized system that says you have a god and a goddess, and that you have these degrees and you have these rites in these systems. And that is awesome. It is a perfectly valid path. It works for a lot of people, and there's many variations in them. And many Wiccans call themselves witches, which is fine because there's, you know, that I'm not going to argue how people want to label themselves. With traditional witchcraft, you also have a few different thoughts of where that comes from. And some people, you know, say that it goes to Robert Cochrane as someone who revitalized. This is getting a hold of boring pagan history stuff.
No, that's fine.
But it's basically saying that these old systems that have been built upon and that aren't involving the Freemasonry and the Rosicrucian and all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
So what I look at traditional witchcraft as is just a more organic folkloric system. It doesn't have the trappings of ceremonial magic, which again, that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Ceremonial magic, it's totally a fantastic, awesome thing in itself. But it tends to be what, you know, your iconic witch out in the woods. You know, getting in the dirt, messing around with some bones, talking to spirits, and not necessarily having a very organized system about it that, you know, this element needs to exist in the, you know, east is air and south is fire and this is that. I tend to look at, if you walk far enough in the east, you'll end up in the west. If you go far enough north, you'll end up in the south, because the, well, for most of the planet understands the planet is round. but the elements exist in all places. Earth, air, fire, water, and spirit. You know, they don't, we assign these things to them, because when you're working with a group, it's very easy to say, okay, Joe, you've got east and air, so you're going to call that in. And Sally, you're in the south, you know, so that people have a system to work with each other and have a common ground. That's one way of looking at it. But if you're just practicing by yourself and you're not interested in having like the fancy tools and doing robes and various invocations that have come down through those paths, you just do what comes naturally to you, or you do what the folklore inspires you to do. So does that make sense?
That makes sense. And not only that, Laura, but to you, the earth may be round, but to some people it's flat, and those people piss off our listeners. I'm just saying that I've had a lot of that over the past couple of years.
I can imagine.
Do you run into a lot of flat earth witches by chance?
No, I've only really actually run into one person, and they were very drunk, so I'm not entirely sure if they were joking about it or if they were serious, and I've never run into them again, so I have no way of knowing.
Oh, good. Because that, whew. You know, one of the things, switching topics very quickly, because flat earth does kind of piss me off a little bit too. Switching topics very quickly, one of the things that's not in your book really at all is spells. And I guess I would ask the question, why do you not include spells in this book? What was the thinking behind that?
I really wanted people to focus on what makes up their path and their practice. And it's just so many people get interested in witchcraft because there's the initial lore of, oh, I can cast a spell. Well, the best spells that you do cast are ones that you create yourself. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. I mean, there are many beautiful folkloric spells. Judica Illis has a fantastic encyclopedia of like a 5,000. It's a lot of spells in there. But, you know, people think that witchcraft is just, oh, I'll just cast a spell. But you need to understand who you are, where you are, what's going on. And so I wanted people to first orient themselves to those points. I definitely talk about what spellcraft is and what magic is and different kinds of rituals and rites in there, but I didn't make it and here is your easy thing, which pisses some people off. They're like, there's not anything to do. I'm like, what do you mean there's not anything to do? This is a book that you could write a thesis with, your own personal life thesis. Like, there's so much research that you can do that this is a lifelong journey. You're going to read this book and you're going to read it again and then you're going to read it again. And it's going to be different every time because there's just that much information about it. And so I just didn't want, you know, there's especially nowadays, I'm going to say I'm very excited that witchcraft is in the popular spotlight because that means it's being more acceptable, more known. There are more books out there. People can learn more about it. And this is how we break and change society and reevaluate how we live. But there are a lot of books out there that are these like super cute little tiny books that just are basically how to have a rose petal bath, how to, you know, like, these very little cutesy little spell books, which are very sweet, but they don't explain why you use those rose petals or why you want to do this during the full moon and this during the new moon, which I think is kind of a hindrance to people rather than a help, because people need to know why they're doing something instead of just here's do this thing.
No, that's true. Well, let me ask you this. Is there a point in your being or a point in your journey or even in your knowledge where you can start to add to canon or start to be able to be a point where you can write a spell? In other words, and the only thing that you and I can draw on in a point in our knowledge, common knowledge that we can refer to would be like, say, in Catholicism. In order to add to books of the Bible or whatever, you probably have to be in the Vatican. You have to be a cardinal. You have to, you'd have to say, well, if we're going to add anything to the Bible, we have to be of such a knowledge that we can say that we can add this to the Bible. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like that in witchcraft where if we're going to add to rituals or if we're going to add to standard rituals or standard rites or rituals, do I have to be of a certain standard or do I have to be of a certain hierarchy or do I have to have a certain knowledge base or do I have to be of a certain standing in order to do that? Or can I just be of a certain, I don't know, confidence that I can start to make up my own spells?
The come as you are, right? Mm-hmm. That's, I personally don't think, you know, it's a matter of you have to study for a year and a day or, 10 years or 20 years or whatever it is. There's, or only read these books because each person's experience is going to be unique. And a lot of people often say, I was just kind of getting into this and I grabbed these herbs and I did this bath. And then like 3 years later, I found like something very similar in a book. So what does that mean? I'm like, well, it means your intuition is on point, right? So anybody at any point can get into this. And, so going back to our, common base with Catholicism, right? If you have a prayer to a saint, like, what is it? You don't have to be confirmed or have your first communion or, any of these things to light a candle to St. Anthony to help you find something, mm-hmm. or to say that little rhyme. You just light the candle and you just ask the saint, like, help me find this, St. Right. Anthony, come around. Something's lost and can't be found. Boom. That doesn't take any sort of, there's no price of entry.
Right.
Except for right. your time, the candle, and that quieting of the mind to sit down and do it. And the same is true for witchcraft. So you can come at any level. What I would say in cautionary tale is if you don't quite understand what you're doing yet and you want to do something really complicated, then you probably want to wait until you understand how you're, why you're doing it. Especially with a lot of these instant little spell books that sometimes have herbs that really aren't good. You don't want to put rue on your skin because it's an irritant. There are, other things that aren't good for drinking or being in contact, nor do you want to burn if it's not an open air environment. So there's some basic knowledge that would be good, but like lighting a candle or drawing a sigil, the basics are pretty easy to understand. So the only thing that's going to happen over time is you'll become even more effective at it because you'll continue to understand and grow the process. But not until you start doing it do you really learn. So it is definitely, again, the experimental, experience-based process. Can't just read about it. You kind of have to do it.
Okay. And is that the same for somebody who, as well, is kind of on the fence and decides, I think I want to try it. Modern religion and maybe, modern Christianity isn't really what I'm feeling right now, but I know that I'm spiritual. I just don't know where I'm going with it. If somebody out there is thinking that they want to try modern traditional witchcraft, is this maybe the way to go to pick up the book and read in with Weave the Liminal?
I definitely believe so. I think that whatever you're interested in, it's worth to explore it and see if it's the right fit for you. Because otherwise, it's like trying on shoes. You can say, oh, those shoes are really those look really nice. I think I'm just going to buy them without trying them on. Yeah. Right? Try it. See if it works. See if it's comfortable. And then, do you want to walk around in those shoes, or do you just want to sit and look cute?
That's true. Well, Weave the Liminal does help you explore what it means to truly be a witch in the contemporary world and learn how to overcome the issues that can be problematic in defining your path. The book is Weave the Liminal, Living Modern Traditional Witchcraft. We have links up on the description of this show that you're listening to right now. Our guest is Laura Tempest Zakharoff. Laura, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right. And again, Dave will be back on Tuesday, True Crime Tuesday. And again, if you're not listening to True Crime Tuesday, folks, it's available on Patreon. We have a link at darknessradio.com. Click on the banner when you get to darknessradio.com, and you'll see the little skull there with the detective hat and coat. It's available for just $5 a month, and you get not only the current week's show of True Crime Tuesday, you also get all the archives as well. 2 years of archives are sitting there waiting for you, and Dave will be back on Tuesday. Now, every episode, almost every episode, comes with dumb crimes, stupid criminals as well, as we joke around about some of the unusual criminals that are there. But True Crime Tuesday is coming up this Tuesday. And, of course, Dave will be back next week and for Beyond the Darkness. For Dave Schrader, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you for joining us this weekend for the best in paranormal talk radio. This has been Beyond the Darkness.